Chapter 5. The Born. That evening, Jonas and I dined alone in our room. It is a very pleasant thing, I found, to be popular with the mob and known to everyone. But it is tiring, too. And after a time, one grows weary of answering the same simple-minded questions again and again, and of politely refusing invitations to drink. There had been a slight disagreement with the alcalde concerning the compensation I was to receive for my work, my understanding having been that, in addition to the quarter payment made when I was engaged, I would receive full payment for each client upon death. While the alcalde had intended, so he said, that full payment should be made only after all three were attended to. I would never have agreed to that, and liked it less than ever in the light of the green man's warning, which out of loyalty to Vodalus I had kept to myself. But after I had threatened not to appear on the following afternoon, I was paid, and everything peaceably resolved. Now Jonas and I were settled over a smoking platter and a bottle of wine. The door was shut and bolted, and the innkeeper had been instructed to deny that I was in his establishment. I would have been completely at ease if the wine in my cup had not recalled to me so vividly the much better wine Jonas had discovered in our ewer the night before, after I had examined the claw in secret. Jonas, observing me, I think, as I stared at the pale red fluid, poured a cup of his own and said, "You must remember that you are not responsible for the sentences. If you had not come here, they would have been punished eventually anyway, and probably would have suffered worse in less skilled hands." I asked him what he thought he was talking about. "I can see it troubles you. What happened today?"
"I thought it went well," I said.
"You know what the octopus remarked when he got out of the mermaid's kelp bed? I'm not impugning your skill, quite the opposite. But you look as if you could use a little cheering up."
"We're always a little despondent afterward. That's what Master Palaemon always said, and I've found it true in my own case. He called it a purely mechanical psychological function. And at the time, that seemed to me an oxymoron, but now I'm not sure he wasn't right."
"Could you see what happened, or did they keep you too busy?"
"I was standing on the steps behind you most of the time."
"You had a good view then, so you must have seen how it was. Everything proceeded smoothly, after we decided not to wait for the chair." I exercised my skills to applause, and I was the focus of admiration. There's a feeling of lassitude afterward. Master Palaemon used to talk of crowd melancholy and court melancholy, and said that some of us have both. Some have neither, and some have one but not the other. Well, I have crowd melancholy. I don't suppose I'll ever have the chance in Thrax of discovering whether I also have court melancholy or not."
"And what is that?"
Jonas was looking down into his wine cup. "A torturer, let's say a master at the Citadel, is occasionally brought into contact with exultants of the highest degree. Suppose there's some exceedingly sensitive prisoner who's thought to possess important information. An official of lofty standing is likely to be delegated to attend such a prisoner's examination. Very often he will have had little experience with the more delicate operations, so he will ask the master questions and perhaps confide in him certain fears he has concerning the subject's temperament or health. A torturer under those circumstances feels himself to be at the center of things, then feels let down when it's over with. Yes, I suppose I can see that.
Have you ever seen one of these affairs when it was badly botched?"
"No. Aren't you going to eat any of this meat?"
"Neither have I, but I've heard about them, and that's why I was tense.
Times when the client has broken away and fled into the crowd. Times when several strokes were needed to part the neck.
times when a torturer lost all confidence and was unable to proceed? When I vaulted onto that scaffold, I had no way of knowing that none of those things was going to happen to me. If they had, I might have been finished for life. Still, it's a terrible way to earn a living. That's what the thornbush said to the shrike, you know. I really don't. I broke off because I had seen something move on the farther side of the room. At first I thought it was a rat, and I have a pronounced dislike of them. I have seen too many clients bitten in the oubliette under our tower. What is it?
Something white. I walked around the table to see.
A sheet of paper. Someone has slipped a note under our door. Another woman wanting to sleep with you, Jonas said. But by that time, I had already picked it up. It was indeed a woman's delicate script, written in grayish ink upon parchment. I held it close to the candle to read.
Dearest Severian, from one of the kind men who are assisting me, I have learned you are in the village of Saltus, not far away. It seems too good to be true, but now I must discover whether you can forgive me. I swear to you that any suffering you have endured for my sake was not by my choice. From the first, I wanted to tell you everything, but the others would not hear of it. They judged that no one should know, but those who had to know, which meant no one but themselves, and at last told me outright that if I did not obey them in everything, they would forego the plan and leave me to die. I knew you would die for me, and so I dared to hope that you would have chosen, if you could choose, to suffer for me too. Forgive me. But now I am away and almost free. My own mistress so long as I obey the simple and humane instructions of good Father Anir. And so I will tell you everything, in the hope that when you have heard it all, you will indeed forgive me. You know of my arrest. You will remember, too, how anxious your master Grelose was for my comfort, and how frequently he visited my cell to talk to me, or had me brought to him so that he and the other masters might question me. That was because my patron, the good Father Anir, had charged him to be strictly attentive to me. At length, when it became clear that the Autarch would not free me, Father Anir arranged to do so himself. I do not know what threats were made to Master Grelose, or what bribes were offered him, but they were sufficient, and a few days before my death, as you thought, dearest Severian, he explained to me how the matter was to be arranged. It was not enough, of course, that I be freed. I must be freed in such a way that no search should be made for me. That meant, it needs appear that I was dead. Yet the instructions Master Grelose had received had charged him strictly not to let me die. You will now be able to fathom for yourself how we cut through this tangle of obstructions. It was arranged that I should be subjected to a device whose action was internal only, and Master Grelose first so disarmed it that I should suffer no real harm. When you thought me in agony, I was to ask you for means of terminating my wretched life. All went as planned. You provided the knife, and I made a shallow cut on my arm, crouched near the door so some blood would run beneath it, then smeared my throat and fell across the bed for you to see when you looked into my prison. Did you look? I lay as still as death. My eyes were closed, but I seemed to feel your pain when you saw me there. I nearly wept, and I recall how frightened I was that you might see the tears welling up. At last I heard your footsteps, and I bandaged my arm and washed my face and neck.
After a time, Master Gurloz came and took me away. Forgive me. Now I would see you again. And if Father Anir wins a pardon for me, as he has solemnly pledged himself to do, there is no reason why we need ever part again. But come to me at once. I am awaiting his messenger. And if he arrives, I must fly to the House Absolute to cast myself at the feet of the Autarch, whose name be thrice-blessed balm upon the scorched brows of his slaves. Speak to no one of this, but go northeast from Saltis until you encounter a brook that winds its way to Gaiol. Trace it against the current, and you will find it to issue from the mouth of a mine. Here I must impart to you a grave secret, which you must by no means reveal to others. This mine is the treasure house of the Autarchs, and in it he has stored great sums of coined money, bullion, and gems against a day in which he may be forced from the Phoenix throne. It is guarded by certain servitors of Father Anir's, but you need have no fear of them. They have been instructed to obey me, and I have told them of you, and ordered them to permit you to pass without challenge. Entering the mine, then, follow the water course until you reach the end, where it issues from a stone. Here I wait, and here I write, in the hope that you will forgive your Thecla. I cannot describe the surge of joy I felt as I read and reread this letter. Jonas, who saw my face, at first leaped from his chair. I think he supposed I was on the point of fainting, then drew away as he might have from a lunatic. When at last I folded the letter and thrust it into my sabretash, he asked no questions, for Jonas was indeed a friend, but showed by his look that he stood ready to help me. I need your animal, I said. May I take her? Gladly, but I was already unbolting the door. You cannot come. If all goes well, I'll see that she's returned to you. As I raced down the stair and into the inn yard, the letter spoke in my mind in Thecla's very voice, and by the time I entered the stable, I was a lunatic indeed. I looked for Jonas's merikhip, but instead saw before me a great destrier, his back higher than my eyes. I had no notion who might have ridden him into this peaceful village, and I gave it no thought. Without hesitating an instant, I sprang onto his back, drew Terminus Est, and with a stroke severed the reins that tethered him. I have never seen a better mount. He was out of the stable in one bound, and in two, lunging into the village street. For the space of a breath, I feared he would trip on some tent rope, but he was sure-footed as a dancer. The street ran east toward the river. As soon as we were clear of the houses, I urged him to the left. He leaped a wall as a boy might skip across a stick, and I found myself galloping full tilt over a meadow where bulls lifted their horns in the green moonlight. I am no great rider now, and was still less one then. Despite the high saddle, I think I would have tumbled from the back of an inferior animal before we had covered half a league. But my stolen destrier moved, for all his speed, as smoothly as a shadow. A shadow indeed we must have appeared, he with his black hide, I in my Fulgian cloak. He had not slacked his pace before we splashed across the brook mentioned in the letter. I checked him there, partly by grasping his halter, more by speech, to where he hearkened as a brother might. There was no path on either side of the water, and we had not traced it far before the trees rimmed the banks. I guided him into the brook then, though he was loath to go, where we made our way up foaming races as a man climbed steps and swam deep pools. For more than a watch, we waded this brook through a forest much like the one through which Jonas and I had passed after being separated from Dorcas, Dr. Talos, and the rest at the Piteous Gate. Then the banks grew higher and more rugged, the trees smaller and twisted. There were boulders in the stream. From their squared edges, I knew they were the work of hands, and that we were in the region of the mines, with the wreck of some great city below us. Our way was steeper, and for all his mettle, he faltered sometimes on sliding stones, so that I was forced to dismount and lead him. In this way, we passed through a series of little dreaming hollows, each dark in the shadows of its high sides, but each flecked in places with green moonlight, each ringing with the sound of water. But with that sound only, and otherwise wrapped in silence. At last we entered a vale smaller and narrower than any of the others, and at the end of it, a chain or so off where the moonlight spilled upon a sheer elevation, I saw a dark opening. The brook had its origin there, flooding out like saliva from the lips of petrified Titan. I found a patch of ground beside the water sufficiently level for my mount to stand and contrive to tie him there, knotting what remained of his reins around a dwarfish tree. Once, no doubt, a timber trestle had provided access to the mine, but it had rotted away long ago. Though the climb looked impossible in the moonlight, I was able to find a few footholds in the ancient wall and scaled it to one side of the descending jet. I had my hands inside the opening when I heard, or thought I heard, some sound from the vale behind me. I paused and turned my head to look back. The rush of the water would have drowned any noise less commanding than a bugle call or an explosion, and it had drowned this. Yet still, I had sensed something. The note of stone falling upon stone, perhaps, or the splash of something plunging into the water. The vale seemed peaceful and silent. Then I saw my destrier shift his stance, his proud head and forward cocked ears coming for an instant into the light. I decided that what I had heard was nothing more than the striking of his steel-shod feet against the rock as he stamped in discontent at being so closely tethered. I drew my body into the mine entrance, and by doing so, as I later learned, saved my life. A man of any wit, setting out as I had and knowing he must enter such a place, would have brought a lantern and a plentiful supply of candles. I had been so wild at the thought that Thecla still lived that I had none. Thus I crept forward in the dark, and had not taken a dozen steps before the moonlight of the vale had vanished behind me. My boots were in the stream, so I walked as I had when I had led the destrier up it. Terminus Est was slung over my left shoulder, and I had no fear that the tip of her sheath might be wet by the stream, for the ceiling of the tunnel was so low that I walked bent double. So I proceeded for a long time, fearing always that I had come wrong, and that Thecla waited for me elsewhere, and would wait in vain.